Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, February 8th, 2011, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Lavendar. Lavendar's presentation tonight is about the tracking of bloodlines on the planet. Many ET bloodlines were started millennia ago with genetically coded DNA, which resonates to their respective ET heritage. We call them the genetic engineering gods because of the scope of their highly advanced abilities, being able to code programs into the DNA, which would take thousands of years to run. As a starseed soul, the bloodline we choose to house our energy must support our mission with the DNA-coded programs within it. In the second half of the show, we will have this week's Belvelation from Belva Bloomer. This will be the third part of her story of a detailed past life remembrance brought to you from Phoenicia, 727 BC. As our resident health expert, Belva draws on lessons from her personal records to help heal the body naturally when traditional medicine is not an option. We're grateful to have our friend Purple Sage handling the switchboard to help us answer your questions or comments. And please be mindful of others who will also be waiting with questions and try to keep your comments concise. We'd like to thank Sierra for co-hosting in the chat room today for those who can't call in with questions. For those who can, the call-in number is 917-889-8292. 917-889-8292. And press 1 if you have something to say. You can also listen on your computer at blogtalkradio.com/starseed-radio-academy. Before we get started, I'd like to ask each and every one of you for your help. We get a lot of wonderful emails from our listeners and members of our community wanting to know what they can do to help us. As you know, our motto is empowering Starseed to better serve the planet. And one of the best ways we can do that is to increase our visibility. Each week we have over 1,000 people listen to our show, but so far only 157 have registered at Blog Talk Radio and clicked the word follow on our page. So to the management here at Blog Talk Radio, they're not inclined to feature our show on their A-list. I'm sure you're getting the picture. If we could really increase our number of official followers, we'll have a better chance of increasing our visibility. So please, register for free and click the word follow on our show page. You'll be helping not only Starseed Radio Academy, but also an untold number of our Starseed family who have not yet found their way here. If you haven't visited our main site yet, which is starseedhotline.com, we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge. Make sure you check it out. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. If you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. We want to let you know that we have so many requests for our $18 Starseed confirmation, which we call a Stage 1 reading, that there could be up to a two-week wait. With a Stage 1 reading, you'll get your natal and progressed charts and an MP3 of your reading pointing out and explaining your star markings if you have them. Our Stage 2 readings, which are a one-on-one phone consultation, do get priority and do include the Starseed confirmation. Both Lavendar and I are available for Starseed confirmation and personal consultation. So don't forget, if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by ordering your solar return timing. This is when your manifestational ability is amplified 1,000-fold during those 10 hours, so don't miss out. And now I'd like to introduce my dear friend and co-host, Lavendar.
Well, hello from Oklahoma, and we have a storm on the way, so we're going to have a lot of snow tonight and high winds, and it's going to be exciting, as usual, when we have storms like this in Oklahoma. So if something happens that the electricity goes off and I'm on the show, just bear with me. I'll try to get back on on another phone.
Okay, yeah, we have our contingency plan already worked out. It's kind of funny how things like can be going on like a whirlwind all around us while we're doing the show, but the show still keeps going. So would you like to explain a little bit about your presentation this evening before I start the
recording? I have something I'd like to share with the audience. It's about timing and codes and synchronization. I went to Puerto Rico to the Ann Wigmore Clinic for 14 days about 3 or 4 years ago. And I was awakened one morning about 5 a.m., and just something said, get up now, and walk to the beach. And I walked to the beach, and another girl had the same feeling to get up and go to the beach. And when she got there, I just turned to her automatically, and I said, I trust for you to know I'm to hand you that code. And one of these days, you will call me or you'll remind me of this code. And I just, that's part of what I need to tell you today. So she sent me an email and she said, I am to tell you, I trust for you to know. And I looked at the date and it's exactly the time when we were in Puerto Rico. And I trust for you to know is a really, really high coded frequency because it has the ability to go into your soul and give you a level of a trust factor. Is not about emotional trust. It's about trusting that you're fixing to grab a hold of a whole new way of thinking. So I just wanted to pass that on to the audience tonight about the synchronization is confirmation as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and you had not heard from her since. It had been like a couple of years in between, right?
Right.
And she just emailed you up out of the blue on the anniversary and passed you the code back again.
Right. It was just an amazing little gift. I loved it.
Yeah, and there are all different kinds of codes. Some codes are color or sound or words. There's so many different kinds of codes, and when in the presentation that you're about to give, you do talk about codes and you know DNA codes. So I just kind of wanted to preface a little bit because codes can be almost anything, but it's something that has been predetermined to be a code.
Right. Also, I'd like to mention that the Pleiadian experiments or the evolutionary procedures that were given to us in Cairo, Egypt in 1983, you know, were seeded from Cairo. And I can't help but track what's been happening in Egypt lately and also thinking about the millions of walk-ins that came in November of 2009 and have been on the planet ready to, you know, go into motion. And I'm sure that a lot of them are in Egypt because that's where they first seeded this procedure.
Hmm.
Yeah. And to think that most of the people that are in the uprisings are all under 30 years of age, which gives us, you know, back to 1983.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so tonight's presentation is about tracking the bloodlines.
Right. Go ahead and start the recording, and then we'll have. Are you going to do part one and then pause and then?
Right.
Okay.
Right. We have it. We have it in two parts. So if there are any, perhaps questions or comments that I'd like to make in between, I will do it between part one and two.
Okay. Good. Go ahead and start it then.
Okay. From Lavendar, this is tracking the bloodlines.
So I took some more information out of the vault. It's dated October 21st, 2001. day of the first draft. The subject is Tracking the Bloodlines. This past week, I watched a television program called Survivor Africa. This is a program designed to see who can survive the longest period of time in the most harsh conditions, then receive $1 million. One of the challenges presented was to have a member of each team drink cow's blood mixed with cow's milk. This was a distasteful thing for me to watch, but I watched it anyway. It triggered in me what I know about the tracking of bloodlines. Something about the way the blood was mixed with the milk triggered for me this activation. I will write these as they come to me, not necessarily in the order of importance. Blood can carry harmonics of creation and destruction. Blood, which is the life force of the physical body, is also the key to up-spiral and down-spiral fluid activation. The physical body is mostly liquid and made of water, about 90% water. The wave signature of the fluid can correspond to several codes of ancient lineage, traveling back to the creation of that bloodline. A harmonic can be set loose, and a tracking device enables the memory to be activated into the bloodstream, then it can resonate to the soul, who is maintaining the physical body. Those that possess enlightenment at birth are the ones that can carry the codes of this activation. Others along the way can and will also be assembled in ways of activation, and there is no set standard for these kinds of trigger mechanisms since there is no limit to creation. But mostly, those born with tracking devices in the blood seem to have a greater chance of recall than others. It just seems to be the way it is. In the blood is a DNA structure that is carried on a wave signature, and this becomes the main focus of the wave, whether it be creation or destruction. In other words, in a person's blood can determine the traits at birth according to the wave signature. Some bloodlines carry with them the mark of war to such a degree that 7 generations are born to be warriors of bloodletting, even multiplied to 14, then to 24, and on into infinity. The gods of this universe, who were also aligned to genetic engineering, created programs to run in bloodlines for 7 generations, and as time went on, then other time frames were added. These were experiments to see where the bloodlines would go with creation or destruction. Experiments to see at what level the consciousness would maximize or minimize. When experiments went too far or by the whim of some genetic scientist, then some races of people or combinations of were deleted by just total destruction. The premise of some holy wars are the result of such of these experimentations. If the memory of blood serves me now, it is like remembering what my ancestors did and their memories. There are races where peace and demonstrations of evolving humanity seem to reign. Then there are races whose only seemingly right to be on the earth is designed for war and rumors of war. So where does the balance come, one might ask? Royalty and nobility were taught early on to never, and I mean never, marry outside their bloodlines. That was because they were designed to stay within their 7 or 14 generation programs. Think about that for a minute. If they married outside their bloodline, then what would eventually happen? That's correct. They bring another frequency or harmonic into their existing bloodline, then the mixture becomes one of creation or destruction, depending upon the mixture to begin with. The saying, well, it's in the blood, or can't get that man out of my blood, or blood is thicker than water, all these have merit in their sayings. It is a way of identifying the silent harmonic that resonates beyond what most people can track in their consciousness. So, blood has memory, like a computer. What? Let's just for the sake of consideration, take a moment to reflect on this concept for a minute. Blood has memory like a computer. If Mary sees John and recognizes him from his blood instead of his soul, then what can happen? Attraction or repulsion? If it is attraction, then sex, children, and years being together can manifest strictly on the activation of the bloodlines. But what about repulsion? Same is true. An instant dislike for that person happens without any warning. Suddenly, you just can't stand to be in the same room with that person, or a great deal of fear starts to happen, and you can react in a number of ways, whatever way fear can manifest. You can even resort to murder or some warlike tendency before you know it, all based on the frequency of the blood. And this may explain why some wars break out in various places on the earth because of their bloodlines and their tendency for destruction instead of creation. The Middle East right now may be an example of this. September 11th, 2001. Blood carries crystals. Yes, crystals of silica that carries the memory traces. It is from here that all programming and the blood exist. Ley lines within the body are boosted or erased on this principle. Think about the physical body being that of a planet. Crystal ley lines run all around the planet of Earth and some other planets. It is how the planet corresponds with other planets. It is the crystal that sends the signal, just like a computer. It is how the engineering gods keep track of planetary behavior. Think about that for a moment. So it is with the evolution of a species, like the human race. Coded crystals? The genetic engineering gods placed inside of quartz crystal a set of harmonics that could create or destroy resonating fields. Mostly, creation was preferred as a setting stone to evolution, but there were times when destruction was called upon in case the human race had gone too far in their choices, which in turn affected the entire Galactic Federation. That always brought on a new set of tracking devices to be activated, and this was a designed fail-safe system to protect species from going beyond their level of spiritual and technological consciousness. Sodom and Gomorrah and Atlantis were such examples. The destruction was carried out by ETs that were sent to first rescue Lot and his family so the story could be told, and then to blast the twin cities with a technology that burned the retinas even from the soul. Since the eyes are the windows of the soul, then when the destruction ray was set loose, it was through the eyes that the divine fire was able to burn up all the people and every living thing in its path. This was a harmonic that was released in unison with a divine fire very similar to the Ark of the Covenant. You know, coated crystals that are on the up spiral are examples of, you know, in a simple drop of water, like the birth of Jesus, a rainbow, a sunset, etc. Coated crystals that were activated in the Great Pyramid of Giza by the Pleiadians in 1983. Whole frequencies of attunement that keep some bloodlines on their evolutionary time track. Some are programmed for creation, while others are programmed for destruction. Let me explain. If a person is in the up spiral and receives a Giza-coated crystal that is of like vibration, then the creation can be fulfilled. But if the up spiral person receives this crystal that has a down spiral attached to it, then the person seems to resonate with a down spiral energy. The trick here is to know yourself well enough to identify if you're on the down spiral or up spiral before you ever venture into playing with quartz crystal power. Who can take the chance anymore? If a person on the up spiral has a mixture of up and down spiral crystals, then what law manifests? The law of attraction and repulsion immediately sets up a resonating field. The one with the most resonance takes the lead. Think of it like an arm wrestling contest. The one with the most energy wins. When the arm goes 55.5 critical mass is when the results are shown by energetics. It is with the power of quartz crystals, and so it is with blood that resonates in the blood. Same principle of power. When one parent's blood starts to dominate the child, then that child has the tendency of that parent in stronger measure. Take a hold of that concept for a moment, then maybe you just want to weep, either with joy or despair. See how you get caught sometimes in the bloodlines? When a soul picks a bloodline, they know automatically that the blood holds a great deal of power and influence over their journey in the physical body. Some souls even volunteer to go into bloodlines, knowing that the bloodlines will carry that person to soul evolution through progression, through experiences. Even if that soul chooses bloodlines that call for a more destructive influence than creative ones, this sometimes is a real hard call to make, but some do make that call. Those with the influence of the fallen angels seem to gravitate to these experiments in very large numbers. It seems to be the ones most often asked for by this group because of the expansion of the play on the planet. Genetic codes are strong. Don't ever forget that. Sometimes it will override the soul's blueprint, and when this happens, the soul finds itself caught adrift in a lifeboat full of experiences in a sea of life that one did not bargain on when incarnating. That is why the nobility always wanted the bloodlines to remain pure, for through the purity they could pretty well stay on course through lifetimes of incarnations. Their power on the throne depended upon that, and it was easy to track. When the bloodlines crossed over, such as white, black, red, yellow, brown, then a strange set of experiments were laid over the planet with the ley lines of influence felt over the crystal planetary grid system. And no longer could they be tracked on a single frequency of attraction and repulsion as before, but a mixture of time capsules of activation that were totally unpredictable concerning the welfare of nations and people. When religion entered into the picture, then the shaping of the bloodline started to take on a different kind of resonant tone. This would be the way that the gods, the engineering gods, would control the masses, and it was from here that new codes of activation would come to the planet. Now to talk about the planetary lineup of 1983, which I call Pleiadian lineup. When the Pleiadians came to the planet and coded the new crystals with activation, they would hold the frequency between man and nature. Nature has always been in flux, and man has always been in flux, so now the crystals holding the balance between man and nature would hold a new meaning for flux, don't you think? Blue bloods. Heard of that before? Think about the bloodlines that were controlled by royalty. Think of the color of the blood. The blood whose color was the bluest was the color most distinguished. It was in the color that they could tell from their primitive times. The ones with the most purple blood were the ones who could reign in kingdoms because they were automatically considered the ones who could have the higher consciousness. Once the bloodlines were mixed, this became an area of war among the people because they no longer could trust the nobility to make the right decisions for the masses. In evolutionary planning, this was always a consideration, the planning of the bloodlines. It is how the whole Arab-Israeli thing came about. The programs of positive and negative, good and evil. All of those programs are in the blood. The cases of the disease of Alzheimer's, the blood will take over even if the brain cannot. Memories of past, present, and future can be activated at any given time when those with Alzheimer's can take you to places you didn't even think of before. Right out of nowhere can they come. Memories, whether clear or distorted, in an Alzheimer's patient will be a perfect example of what happens in the mixture of bloodlines on a really bad day in the life of a human on Earth. The astrological planetary readings can also be found in the blood. And one day, scientists will be able to pull up on the screen a drop of blood and will be able to tell what genetic engineering god it came from, plus all of the planetary information that goes with it. That means your chart can be seen right up on the screen. It will give the tendencies of the person and will someday present it in a court of law many, many years from now. That is just one of the examples of the problems that I experience coming back from the future. In ancient times, when people drank other people's blood, they were drinking their memories. Many sacred ceremonies were conducted through the blood, whether it be from sacrificing a person's life for the blood, or taken from a person with their permission, or from a menstruating woman. The ancient lore of vampires is actually based on this premise. And look at all the movies now about vampires and blood. Blood rituals have been known to be in every culture, but do you ever think about tracking why these past ancestors decided to use blood as their carrier? Okay, so now we're talking again about the Pleiadian line of 83. Several experiments were placed in the blood during the three-day activation. Whether one was at a sacred PowerPoint or just sitting in their own living room watching television, it made no difference because the blood was activated no matter where you were on those 3 days. Tracking devices placed in the blood earlier in other lifetimes became activated and simply went about their business of evolution. However, every Pleiadian lineup since has great significance to those that were placed on the activation beam of evolutionary programs. All over the planet this was done, with all bloodlines involved with Pleiadians and their starseed programs. All were placed on transmutation of bloodlines having to do with planetary balance, especially those with assignments connected with the environment, such as those in charge of guarding the planet from nuclear destruction, which of course would hurt not only the planet, but other interlocking world spaces connected to other crystal planets. A violation of the heaviest kind, those of atomic nuclear destruction. Germ warfare? Well, that's another experiment. Like those phrases of the Bible talking about releasing from the angel of death a vial that would be poured on the planet and many would die. With the anthrax scare now happening, this is just a reminder of what could be turned loose on the planet in order to scrub the bloodlines. Only those with high resistance to germ warfare would be able to survive for the next set of generation experiments set forth by the gods in charge. More to come later, and this was written November 3rd, 2001, in Southwest Oklahoma. I would like to make note that there is a book called The Gods of Eden, and it's by William Bramley. Gods of Eden by William Bramley. If you have not read this book, do pick it up because it gives you real insight to how the gods do play. And it also lets me know there is a certain page number that when a person is reading it, that they can't get past this page. And the reason for that is there's an implant in the brain system that will automatically stop the person from reading this book. And I had 5 people tell me the exact same page that they stopped reading the book. And when I tracked it, I realized that if they had just turned the page, they would have been freed freed completely in their soul records. That was an awesome discovery for me. So if you read Gods of Eden, and there's something that says, put down the book, you're sleepy now, do not go any further, I really want to know about this. I want to know if this experiment is still going on. So, I guess that's all I want to say for today. So, back to you, Ariel.
Well, before I start part two of this, Lavendar, I have two questions I'd like to ask, and then we'll proceed with part two.
Okay.
Okay. Is there a correlation between planetary transits and the activation of blood programs and codings? In other words, by knowing what transits are coming up for you personally, can you also see where the activation is coming, that the lights will go on or you'll go to the next level? Is that intertwined like that?
Yes, it is. And, sometimes a transit will happen repeatedly to a bloodline, and the planetary energies are in the bloodline, and say, the memory of something horrendous that happened to that bloodline when those planets were in those placements. Take, for instance, like the Civil War, World War II, something very, very big and heavy that would happen to that bloodline. And every time that those transits would happen again, that person may experience the memory of that time. That may account for some people having dreams of other times and places, or perhaps just, getting melancholy on a certain day every year, and they don't know why. So, yes.
So, knowing your transits will help explain or at least bring you some understanding of why something is happening. I think it's really, really critical. It's part of your starseed tool belt to know what transits are happening to you personally at any given time so that you can ride the waves rather than have them crash over you.
That's true. That's why Robert Hand and I were born the same day, and he wrote the book Planets in Transit, and when I read his book, I used to read it daily, to learn my transits, and somehow he and I were connected on a vibratory rate of information about astrology, and of course here I've taken it to a whole other level of galactic astrology and discovery of the star markings. But what I was going to say was that knowing your transits gives you an idea about how to, plan your day. If you have like a Mars, Pluto, Uranus aspect in your chart, pay attention to if you're traveling or what are you doing that could be very explosive, and you need to be more alert to the transits that you have in your chart.
Absolutely. The other question that I had is that if you, as a starseed, have come into a bloodline that has been mixed, is there a way through your own consciousness that you can override that skewing effect? And as you were saying, like one parent's blood will dominate over the other, is there a way you can consciously get on the track you don't understand what I'm trying to say? If you have,
and, well, that's why the walk-in program was designed. The walk-ins that come can override those things. That's one of the great tools that the walk-ins have, is that they can simply override the bloodline programming that's trying to, let's put it this way, the destructive bloodline that a walk-in may encounter. Because the walk-in, its assignment is to keep everything into the up spiral for up spiral evolution. So,
okay, so it's a matter of consciousness.
Yeah, it depends on the person's consciousness. If they, you know, if they're just by the whim of their family or the whim of their friends or their workplace, and others are controlling their life, and then the bloodline kicks in, it kind of renders the person a little helpless at times because they don't have the consciousness to know what's happening. But someone that's risen above it and can say, oh, this isn't mine, this belongs to somebody else, and I'm just going to stay true to my alignment. So it's really important to know how to stay with your alignment. Once you get it, you don't waver.
Right. Coming to a place of understanding is one thing, and holding on to it and not, you know, backtracking or regressing, that's another thing, being able to hold the frequency once you've found it.
Right.
Because it there will be times when you have to make choices, and you have to hold that alignment to make the right choices. And that actually brings me to comment on the code that you told me you brought back from the most recent Teton meetings, which is never yield to a lesser power. How
right.
did you put that?
Well, that's actually that code has been around for a while, but it was just it was a friendly reminder. Never yield to a lesser power, right?
But in order to do that, you have to know who you are.
That's right.
So that comes back. That comes back to you have to know who you are.
Right.
Okay. If there are no other things that you'd like to add, I'll go ahead and start part two.
Go ahead and start part two.
Part two, tracking the bloodlines.
So this is really part two of tracking the bloodlines. This was written in 2003 in Ruidosa, New Mexico. The transformation process here in Ruidosa, New Mexico has brought me to a whole new window of observation. The theme seems to be consistent with my chapter called Energy Does Not Lie, Only People Do. It appears to me that most people are not connected to how energy actually manifests. They've been so programmed through the pacification program of religion, dogma, and bloodlines that to actually experience someone who is conscious and aware at the levels of tracking energy really is a rarity. Another thought while it's on my mind is that after reviewing the past 20 years of concerning this galactic training, here is what it boils down to. Galactic training is really designed for those that have rites of passage for global group mind consideration. And what I mean by consideration is that even after the training, then a series of exercises will be conducted to actually see if the participant is holding galactic knowingness concerning the evolutionary programs that match the timelines for either a consensus or an agreement with laws of cause and effect that are permitted to play in the third dimension. Many are called, but few are chosen. Well, that applies to galactic training as well. The reason for this is that many will be born with, and even later be, trained with galactic codes. But the real kicker is to be able to hold the codes, be diligent enough to know when to use the codes and when to keep them safe from other pacification programs. There are certain alliances from off-planet placements that have been infiltrating planet Earth for a long time with this kind of knowingness. At least to my knowledge, there are over at least 33 different species that actually have long and short-term exercises running simultaneously with bloodlines all over the planet. All of these exercises have one thing in common, and that is who can take the power, hold it, run with it, manifest it to a higher order without committing a violation of cosmic or earth law. Those monitoring these experiments are within them the ability to empower or cancel an experiment. It all depends on the kind of experiment that is being conducted and how much influence and power the end result shows how to affect, well, a large group of people or in a planetary work in the balance of ecosystems on the planet. This is hard to describe sometimes as they are, you know, constantly changing, and some species feel the need to override other species' programs, and this is what makes for chaos and war on the planet. Just think for a minute about how wars are being fought over which God and religion is right or wrong. This is an atrocity, and there have been many meetings lately among certain species to evaluate this problem and to do something about it. The meetings that were conducted recently inside the Grand Tetons during the July 1 through July 10 meetings mostly were about how to end the interference of experimental programs so that they can run their course. The subject of free will was once again debated for many days and was decided that certain avenues should be taken to reinstill the free will doctrine so that it can be established back on the planet. There have been so much and so many distortions of what free will actually means that several species had to review the first doctrine placed on the planet concerning the beginning experiments concerning free will. Personal accountability became a tracking code, as those that have open channels or have the codes of remembrance, and then have the responsibility to align with others who can assimilate and create action based on cosmic codes. Now, for those carrying the codes, let us review what those codes reveal. First, let's look at the bloodlines. Because of intermarrying and crossing with other bloodlines, several codes have been distorted. This was expected to happen and been closely monitored. Pure bloodlines are getting extinct, and only a very few have their original codes set forth. Those operating in the third dimension with partial codes are the dangerous ones. Having only a blip of information and no follow-through instructions has created a place of mass disinformation. Consider that these defect codes, when placed with other defect codes run by pacification programs, with a touch of mind control programs, well, it can simply be a place where masses of people on the planet choose to just exit. The self-destruct code in some will activate, while in others will seem to create a whole new life of their own. When your blood is running you and the spirit can't get through is when a deep sorrow activates and causes those with galactic programs to just misfire. This is happening with much regularity now on the planet, and for some, it is truly their exit off the planet. Let's talk about walk-ins for a minute. Walk-ins, yes, they have their part to play. And those tools, and should the term be, you know, implanted with time, some of them are planted with time-release codes, well, these become activated, and then a series of choices ensues. And for some, there are no choices, as they're made in advance, and they just simply run the programs in their course. Then there are those with implants that have been disconnected for periods of time and then reconnected at a later date. Some are taken out altogether and are allowed their bloodline program to take over. When one ceases to function, then another takes over. Reality in the third dimension have different consequences when played out and when viewed from other realities, and it doesn't read the same as in 3D. This one is very hard to explain, as it fits into the same category as trying to describe colors from another dimension. Sometimes you just can't. This is one reason that those tracking energies appear to experience the term, well, an energy does not lie, only people do. It is true. Perception is reality. For whom, and for how long. Now back to free will. Some have within them the codes of free will, but it's hard to stay activated when so much mind control is beaming to the masses. One can take just so much bombardment without being affected. The trick is to realize the moment of infiltration and to constantly jump in frequency when the lock cannot happen to your brain. This is a trained conscious choice and demands a lot of energy to maintain, and for some, well, this can be a burnout. Once you have maintained the discipline of remaining free of mind control, then the walk-in has a stronger chance of maintaining the codes that were given. One of the topics in this year's Teton meetings was that codes are being hijacked, meaning that some walk-ins have the ability to hook up to others' codes and simply mimic them long enough to set loose other walk-ins on a false mission. Not nice. For some women that have been trained in the ancient arts of knowing, this can be a problem as they carry some of these codes in their womb space, and others will connect there and then simply run off with the codes. It's hard to trace because Earth explanation takes hold and it looks like some romantic sexual response then starts to happen. There is a reason for some women to experience long bouts of celibacy. The pact made with knowingness is the sacred spiral of holding the codes intact. This isn't about being pure or chaste. This is about being smart and aligned to holding codes that are only to be released in sacred space, in sacred time, and with sacred accountability. There are those walk-ins on the planet with only one mission, and that is to steal the codes from the women holding them in their womb space. The trouble here is identifying this code-stealing time bandits and holding steady until their programs get tired and look for other prey. One cannot get distracted because of some familiar longing or remembering past life activity, because, you know, so many get caught there. The free will choice now for many is to acknowledge and move on, as moving on will at least give one the chance to regroup and evaluate their actions.
Well, Lavender, thank you so much for this information. I'm wondering about, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. There are a lot, I mean, a lot of us have, speaking as a female, before knowing that you were holding certain codes in your womb space, perhaps had liaisons with non-aligned or lower consciousness men. Is there anything you can do to recoup that? I mean, certainly you can not let it happen again and be more discerning, but all of us, I know all of us have been there, and it's like, man, what was I thinking? But can you get your codes back, I guess is what I'm saying?
It's not just that they're gone. They've just been met. They just took them.
Oh, they took
They read them and took them. That doesn't... You have to have a... Someone has to be very, very astute, aware of what they're doing to actually steal the codes from the womb space. So not many people know how to do that. So, you know, if you... you know, happened to stumble into a one-nighter somewhere and had a really good time, and it was a lower consciousness, you know, the chances are that no codes were stolen. We're talking about the people that really are on the planet knowing these kinds of things.
Okay. All right, so that, well, that makes me feel a little bit better. Yeah, I mean, we have all been there because, you know, when you're 20 years old, you just don't know about this stuff. Of course, I think some of the 20-year-olds these days are a lot more savvy than we were. But we do have some callers with questions. Are you ready for that?
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, we have a good friend of ours named Lynn who is ready to talk.
Okay.
Hello, Miss Lynn. Hello. You're on the air.
Hi, kiddo. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Do you have a comment or question for Lavendar?
Well, I just made mainly a comment. I'm delighted to hear this information coming out and so glad that you're doing it and presenting it and giving it to all of us. So thank you.
Okay, good. Thank you, Lynn. Here.
Oh, well, thank you so much for calling and telling us that. We appreciate it, and thank you for being you.
And Lynn, you I'll call you later.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, thanks, Lynn. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. All right, we have next Jen. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. Real quickly, really fantastic information, so my mind is abuzz with questions, but one of them has to do with if you are, Lavendar, if you are born straight off the ship, if you will, how does that tie into a bloodline?
Well, first of all, if you're coming straight off the ship, you already have your roadmap of bloodlines, and you know the bloodlines that you're coming into, and possibly you have been in those bloodlines before. So the ones that come directly from the ship, they have, you know, they know that they're coming down to finish either a 7-year generation program or a 14 generation program. And also the ancestors of the bloodline, and how many of them are holding the light, and how many of them are going forward with progressive up spiral energies in their bloodline.
Okay.
So coming straight from the ship, yeah. No accident there about, you know, who you choose for your parents. You choose your parents.
Okay.
Sometimes very carefully.
Yeah. The other question I had has to do with one of the comments that you made with regard to, and pardon me because everything was so so interesting and so calming. I'm actually at such a calm state right now. You mentioned something about people misfiring as a result of some of the energies taking place on the planet right now. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, misfiring comes because so many things are being thrown at you at once, and whether it's news on television or your work or a romantic relationship or survival issues, money issues.
Right.
You know, it's a combination, it's a cluster. When a cluster happens, you start misfiring.
Okay, because that really does help for a lot of things. I think a lot of folks have been experiencing that frenetic energy, but, having certain gifts that just seem to suddenly stop working as effectively.
Well, and think of the electromagnetics, which we've been talking about for the last couple of shows, you know. You know, you throw in all the things I've just mentioned, and then you throw in HARP and cell phone towers and cell phones and computers.
Which, by the way, let me just say, I got my wand and my pendant in the mail today.
Oh, good.
The zero point energy, so I am very happily wearing them. But I know we have people in queue, so those are my big questions, and thank you so much for sharing. I think I'll just have to go back and replay it online so I can hear the message again, but thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you, Jen.
Thanks, Jen. Talk to you later.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Next. Okay, we have Felipe. Felipe, you are on the air.
Hi, Ariel. Hi, Lavendar. How are you?
Good.
Good, thank you.
Thank you for the program. Yeah, I got just two questions briefly. My first question is, I just read the book, The Expected One, about the Mary Magdalene bloodline that just been discovered in the last few years. Is that discovery in right timing with the awakening of the planet, the human consciousness?
Okay.
Is it related to the...
Absolutely.
Well, that's great. My second question is, I heard once a report about the power of the human blood, and somehow I realized that what this Pleiadian report was saying, that menstrual blood of the women is very, very powerful and very sacred.
That's
which
true.
Which is the opposite of what the our civilization has looked at as in women. It's been looked at as something kind of a dirty, needs to be hidden, and so forth. So my comment is that somehow in the animal kingdom, the males mate when the female is bleeding.
Right.
And the humans in our day today is the opposite.
That's true. Very true.
So I'm just wanting to, you know, finding out about the bloodline from Mary Magdalene and all of that, that history, and as we know it, is totally backwards.
Right.
No wonder we're in the state of disconnected and totally unbalanced from the universe, because we really went off to the side instead of being in the center of the true knowledge of who we are, where we come from, or where we headed.
Those
were my kind of questions and comments. I do appreciate your timing and all your such a rich information that you ladies share with us.
And by the way, I mailed your package yesterday.
You just read my mind. I was thinking about it.
You'll get it tomorrow.
Appreciate it. Bless your heart. So I'm going to be like a little kid on Christmas waiting for that. Thank you. I don't want to take a lot
great.
Of your time, ladies. I'll be in touch. I know you're getting swamped, but I guess this is just we're just warming up, I guess, huh?
Yes. Yeah, thank you so much.
It's a good thing. It's a very
thank
good thing
you.
Because people do respond. Thank you so much for calling in, Felipe. Bye-bye.
Oh, you're welcome. Bless your hearts.
Okay. Well, next caller we have is Ralph from the 770 area. Hello, Ralph. You're on the air.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Do you have a comment or question for...
Yeah, I have a question for Lavendar. Thank you very much for visiting this subject. This is dynamite information. I think for everybody to be aware of and ponder on. But I was wondering if you have a certain bloodline and you have a predisposition to, you know, to do certain things because of that. Is there anything we can do in this lifetime to offset those things, especially if they're negative?
No, absolutely. Once you become conscious of a thing, you can change it. You are what you're conscious of.
Oh, okay.
You are what you're conscious of. You know, one time I got that phrase and I put it on, I don't know, like 25 pieces of paper, and I stuck it all over the house. Because I knew this was a really big key. You are what you're conscious of. And the minute you're conscious of something, you can jump to the next frequency.
Yeah, and
okay.
Awareness...
Go ahead.
I was going to say awareness is transcendence.
Okay, so if that's true, then how do we become aware of exactly... our predispositions, if we have no clue. For instance, myself, I have no clue. And I'm looking for, looking to make sure that I'm kind of being all I can be, so to speak, as I am with the bloodline that I'm in. How can I find out exactly where I am?
You know, when you are the best you can be, and you're conscious, and you're striving to go into the up spiral and keep your intent, alignment, commitment to your soul records, you can certainly override your bloodline. And you can ask for help. You can ask for the guidance that oversees you. You can strive to just, you know, keep your blood as clean as you can possibly, you know, get it to be. And having clean blood is really, really important. And blood cleansers, and I love Palo de Arco because it comes from a tree in South America, and it grows, you know, up 20,000 feet and has purple blossoms, so it has to be good, right? But I really like Palo de Arco. Why? Because it cleanses the blood. And if you have clean blood, then you have clean organs. And even though you may have some genetic disposition coming from your bloodline, you know, pretty soon, you know, that 55 and a half critical mass will kick in, and you'll just override it. So
can I give an analogy? I just thought of something that might be oversimplified, but I think it fits your question, Ralph. You know how the stereotype of Italian families that they yell at each other all the time, and that would be in the it's in the blood. You know, they yell at each other all the time, and they're always picking. And if that was just not comfortable for you as a member of an Italian family, every moment that every day that you live, you just say, you know, I find peace. You make all these positive affirmations, and I'm not going to yell and argue today. And then after enough days and time of doing that, then it becomes your consciousness and the way you live. And in that way, and actually this is a very simplified way of looking at it, but you've overcome the blood tendency to bicker all the time. And that can be translated into all kinds of families and all kinds of tendencies. But you just choose that today you're going to feel this way, and you just use positive affirmations, and pretty soon you will kind of evolve yourself out of that program. Does that sound good to you, Lavendar?
Absolutely, absolutely. And anything that happens, say you have brothers and sisters and they're all, you know, in prison, or they're drug addicts, or they've just taken the wrong paths, you know, and perhaps you're embarrassed about it, you know, it's like, okay, that happened to them, but my soul's different, and I'm here to change some things in our bloodline. And, you know, you just have to suit up and know that.
Is that transferable for future generations once you've been able to overcome and conquer those things? As far as your bloodline is concerned, does that transfer?
Yes, you can. Absolutely. You can. Your bloodline gets recalibrated, especially if you have some celestial or galactic help that helps you with that. Absolutely. It gets transmuted. The word is transmutation.
Transmutation. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. That's good to know. Good.
You're not calling from McDonald's, are you?
You're not going to let me forget that. Oh. No, I'm not. I'm in a sacred space here.
I'm just kidding you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You,
God bless both of you.
Goodbye.
So much. Great questions. Thank you for calling in. Bye-bye.
I just had to say that.
I know. Let's check in with Sierra.
I need to go put some drops in my eyes, so talk to Sierra just for a moment.
Okay. Hello, Sierra. Hello, Sierra, you're on the air. Have you got your phone on mute? We're checking with Sierra in the chat room. Okay, if anybody's in the chat room, tell Sierra that I'm talking to her. Okay, then. Well, Lavendar's putting drops in her eyes. Sometimes when she carries this
Okay, I'm back.
You're back. I was going to say, sometimes when you carry this big energy that you do for the shows, sometimes your contacts just fly right out of your eyes, and you have to
I know.
You have to keep on top of that. Well, I've just been checking in with Sierra, and apparently she's having trouble with her connection because she just dropped off line. Well, she'll call back in. So the people in the chat room, if you're waiting with questions, as soon as she calls back in, we'll... Oh, there she is. Okay. Are you back, Sierra? Hello? We cannot hear you. Do you have your phone on mute?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me now? Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties here. I heard you the entire time, but my phone was doing something very strange. Okay, I'm here. I'm back.
Okay,
yes,
good.
There are questions from the chat room. And then let me ask Lavendar, though. Lavendar, would you like me to go ahead and read this letter that you got? Or would you like me to do the questions?
Go ahead and read the letter. I'd like to share that with the group.
Okay, great. So this is a letter that Lavendar received from someone who'd had a reading from her. It says, "Dear Lavendar, last August you did a reading for me. I am an anesthesiologist from Cincinnati, Ohio. Your reading was very accurate, and I thought I would give you some feedback about it. You told me that I would meet some of my soul group over the next few years, and I would meet them all over the world. About 2 weeks before the reading, I took some spiritual classes with a woman. A few of her students knew me from past lives. This has continued since that time. I apologize. I've met students from Europe, Asia, Canada, and the Caribbean, who I believe are my soul group. You also said that I would get to know myself better, and this has also occurred. You mentioned that I was being motivated by ETs. I'm sorry, not motivated, monitor. You mentioned that I was being monitored by ETs. I recently had a monitoring device removed from my neck that was placed by an ET. There was evidence of the Jesus and Mary Magdalene bloodline in my church. I have been told that one of my past lives was spent with some people close to Jesus. This doesn't mean that I'm part of the bloodline there, but that there may be an association. I appreciate your reading and thought you might like to hear the outcome 6 months later. Sincerely yours."
Oh, great. And if anyone's listening that wants to write in and give us an update, if I've done a session with you, I'd like to know, you know, how it's going and if there's any feedback you want to share. And we won't read your name on the air, but, you know, the message would be great for others to hear.
Very good.
Yes, so there are 1, 2, 3, 4 different questions from the chat room. One is... we have a listener that had 51 pints of blood transfusion and wants to know, how does blood transfusions figure into the energetics of bloodlines? If you get, like, almost all your blood switched out, how does that actually work inside the genetics of the bloodline? Does it disrupt anything? Does it add? Does it take away? What is your thought of that?
Well, there's many factors to consider, transfusions can sometimes interfere with a person because that blood may be stronger in vibratory tone than the blood that you originally had, and maybe you'll have the tendencies to have, you know, different personality traits or different things happen to you that normally wouldn't happen because of blood transfusions. I know that if you can, if you're going to have an operation, you should ahead of time have your own blood put back into you. That would be one of the safest ways to guard against that. Of course, if you're in an accident and if it's a life and death situation, Then it just has to be that way.
This listener actually said that they felt better after the blood transfusion. So maybe it was something that was meant to, you know, slated to happen to maybe help during that person's evolution.
Well, see, you know, sometimes you could get a blood transfusion that has a stronger resonant field and actually throw you more into the up spiral than what you had to begin with.
You know, I'm not a medical person, but I believe that each blood cell has a lifespan, and that eventually over time the transfused blood would just be replaced as it dies out, be replaced with blood that's been manufactured from your own system. So would that not be a temporary situation?
Yeah,
I'm not a medical person, but I think that might be the way it works.
I think there's many combinations.
That's an interesting question, though. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so the next question is, we were talking about the codes that are in blood, codes that are passed down from family member to family member, different things like that. And a listener wants to know if you have somebody that's a part of your, quote, family, but they're not your biological family, they're not like your born family, but they're very close to you, can they, when passing, pass codes to you that can later be downloaded when you're ready for them?
Well, I don't know. If they're not blood related, it depends on the consciousness of the person. Depends on, well, maybe their soul records are connected, and maybe they're not connected by blood, but maybe they're connected by soul records. You know, could have something to do with it also. Very interesting question.
If you can get a copy of someone's codes by having sex with them, could you not also get a copy with their conscious passing of them to you?
Perhaps. Yeah, perhaps. Yeah.
That's a really good question, too.
Yeah. Chat room's really on fire tonight.
Well, it's, yes. It's, and then I just got corrected on the question. Within their own family, if somebody's passed on within their own family, so it is in the same bloodline.
Okay.
To his grandson. And so I guess that's a yes then, you know, from what you had talked about before. So that I think maybe specifically the particular question is, if that person's passed on and there's codes to be passed down, that it does pass down through the bloodline, even if it's in-laws and different things like that, like one or two people removed.
Yeah.
And then whenever the download is available, then that person could have access to it.
Right. I don't know how many people keep up with genealogy, but I have noticed, you know, when I used to travel around and go looking at cemeteries and looking at birth dates, and I saw so many families that had the birth dates with these starseed codes. You know, the great-great-grandfather and grandmother, and then on and on and on. I'd stand there and I was just amazed to see, you know, seven generations in a cemetery, and they all had the birth dates with these star codes. It's like, whoa, you know?
There's no accident.
No.
That's
and they
true.
Weren't born in the same month, but I'm just saying they were born in that, you know, that 16th, 17th, 18th, and they would die with some of those dates too, you know. The 25, 26, 27 degrees planetary placements.
Well,
so there was a flow of genetics with bloodline and with astrological placements. All of it was swirling together.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I know I never met my great-grandmother who was a full-blooded Cherokee medicine woman. But when I came to a certain age, I started having all these dreams, and it was a ceremony and certain things like that. And it was before I even knew that I came from Cherokee bloodline. I had been taken away by the state and put in the foster care system and then brought up by a Southern Baptist family. And I, at a certain age, I think it was right around 18, it just hit me. And I was just having all these dreams, and it was like, was very experiential, and I really believe it was the codes being passed down through my bloodline that had me start to awaken. It had me actually go out and start looking for my family and looking for the reasons for the different things that were happening to me. So, I really believe that through my bloodline, my great-grandmother was reaching out and passing on different things.
Right. I think so, too.
Was there one more question?
A couple more, actually. It's a delineation of a walk-in, very specifically. Is there both a walk-in of ET origin and a walk-in aspect of, you know, from your higher self, from another, your higher dimension?
What's the? I'm not sure what the question is.
So there's both the walk-in of an ET phenomenon, but then is there a walk-in aspect of your own self from a higher dimension?
Of course, your higher self is the place where you tap your own records to see, you know, to be able to function with all your karmic records, and, you know, higher self is a different frequency and a different energetics than a walk-in. A walk-in actually is another entity that comes to either temporarily be with you or permanently take your body. They're totally different. Now, your higher self can ask for a walk-in.
I mean, technically, if it's your higher self, it wouldn't be a walk-in because they were already there. It would be
right.
More like a wake up than a walk in. But are there not also astral walk ins? Or would that be considered possession?
Well, that's a very gray line. Yeah. There are some astrals that have the ability to possess. Mm-hmm.
And that's not always a bad thing. You know, like Whoopi Goldberg in the movie Ghost.
Right.
I mean, she was possessed by an astral temporarily to pass that information, or you know, it could be through a loving nature, but galactic walk-ins are of a completely different
astrals
energetic.
Are very limited in what they can actually do in higher realms. They can only play in their realm.
Okay. All right, next question.
Let's see here. There was, how do we know, it must have been something in what you said that this listener got this from, how do we know if we have a crystal with a down spiral energy in it?
How's your life going? that's kind of tricky. I'm not sure. Talking about a down spiral in the blood, is that the question?
No, I think
an external crystal.
I'm not clear if it's an external crystal or if it's a crystal in the blood. So I guess that's a point, too. I'm looking to see if somebody... going to clarify that for me.
I mean, correct me, Lavendar, if I'm wrong, but crystals are programmed in the first place by the energy and frequency of intent.
That's right.
So if you thought that you do have a down spiral crystal, then use your intent in an up spiral fashion to reprogram it.
And clean it in... Yeah, clean it in salt and water and vinegar and set it in the sun and start over.
Okay, yeah. So they finally said, my question was, is it possible if there's down spiral energy stuck in a crystal to clear it? So like you all were saying. And then they're getting a lot of suggestions here from the chat room also.
I mean, generally speaking, intent is everything. It's your thought form at a certain frequency. And if you hold your intent at a certain frequency, it will manifest itself. Whether it's a high frequency, it'll manifest as something good. And if it's a low frequency, it will, you know, start the down spiral. So your intent is everything. And don't ever discount or underestimate the power of your intent. You know, even if you silently wish that, you know, that so-and-so would slip on a banana peel and you know, those little thoughts count as well as the big ones. So you have to really monitor your what you project, because as a starseed, it's much stronger from you than from someone whose squirt gun only goes 3 inches. You know? Okay.
Do we have any callers on the switchboard?
I believe we just had another one come up. Hang on a second. If there's another question from the chat room, you can take that.
No
okay.
Questions.
All right. Well, yes, we do. We have Will. Will, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Hey, Will, have you been planting those crystals in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, yeah. I've been planting them around. I've been handing them to a lot of starseed, actually, who are coming to me. A lot of young people are awakening, and they're coming to me, and they're just hinting at me, and I just know that I have to give them a crystal. So, and I'm planting them around trees and so, you know, and it's great energies. They have a very strong but gentle vibration. Well, let's see. I had a question for Lavendar, I guess. I read your site, and you guys have like a little dictionary, I guess, to talk about terms of starseed and indigos. And I was wondering, if indigos come from aboard ship directly, how do other starseeds get here? Are there like different factions of starseed that arrive through different methods other than being a being from a ship, or do they travel through consciousness? Like, how does that work?
Wow. Well, there's the 14-generation experiments that are being conducted from several starships. The one that I can speak of the most is the Star of Bethlehem. And so the ones called the indigos, those are the ones that have extra juice, extra things that they will need to pass on to their children because of the evolutionary state that this planet's going to be in a few years.
So
indigos are an upgrade of starseed that has been on the planet for some time. It's a different kind of frequency. It's a different kind of knowing. It's
right. So it'd be kind of like with me, kind of with the knowing frequency and stuff?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Okay, and I'm pretty sure this would be possible too, that you have memories from your ancestral lines, but that you have incarnated in that same bloodline countless times during that experiment, so you have been your ancestor at some point?
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes you carry the soul memory and the blood can interact, and all of a sudden you just, you know, you'll have full consciousness of where you've been in all your lifetimes.
In
that bloodline, especially.
Right. Wow. All
you know,
right.
Try
well,
not
I guess...
to go over the edge with it, though, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, it's hard. I mean, I just got a glimpse of what it's like to awaken to a past life consciousness, and it's very, very strong. Like you said, you can be activated a bit too much. So, you know, I don't think I want all of that in one lifetime. So,
yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. You have to be careful because you can get caught up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and Lavendar?
You know, you can get, yeah.
Sorry.
You have to be sure that you're not into judgment. You have to have, a place where you view things and you're viewing it and you're not reacting to it in a judgmental way at all.
Right. Right.
That's the real trick of looking at past lives.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. I wanted to tell you that after your reading, over the past few months of processing all the information you gave me, because you know it's a lot of information. I'm in so much better alignment, and I'm getting into writing articles and studying metaphysics and really doing what you said that I was doing, which is fostering a new consciousness. So thanks a lot for your help. It's really, really great.
I'm glad I could have helped you, and I'm glad that you're sharing it with our audience. Thank you, Will. Keep up the good work with the crystals.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Will. Well, I think we have we don't have any more questions. Let me check once more with Sierra to make sure before we move on to our Belvelation.
Okay.
Okay. Little clicking trouble here. All right, Sierra, do we have any other questions before we move on?
Not right now. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Just checking in. We'll talk to you soon. Okay. We're ready for this week's Belvelation, which, as I said earlier, is part three of a very detailed remembrance from a past lifetime that Belva is recalling for us that took place in Phoenicia, 727 B.C. So here is Belva's story, read by Lavendar.
So now we're going to continue from last week's story from Belva Bloomer, who has recall of her time in Sidon, Phoenicia. And I will be reading it for her. We knew that the king of Assyria had spies in Sidon, Phoenicia. It had been predicted by my spiritual teachers that Hezekiah, in the future, would be the victor and would kill Sennacherib. So when those horrible assassin soldiers arrived, their orders were to kill everyone, to spread terror and to find Hezekiah and his mother, Abijah, that was my name, and make an example of our death to show the power of the Antichrist, Sennacherib, king of Assyria. To keep busy and away from Hezekiah, I tried to stay alive as long as possible, to give him time to leave with help of Malatar, the husband of the blonde girl, the one that sold the cheese. Shehem was her name. I had been there, and we had found the king's box and had hidden it so that they would have it easily when they left. Malatar was the son of Lasmeris, the mayor of Sidon. Also, he was the captain of their army. Shehem said that he was an expert with the sword. I knew he was the only one that could fight to protect Hezekiah. They secretly left to join the crew of a Greek ship in the harbor. The assassins caught me and forced me to straddle a pole. They stood the pole up in the square for all of Sidon to see. And there I lived for only 3 days. The boys were safe on the ship, and Shehem was visited by those soldiers. They asked for the kid, and she offered him a baby goat. They stabbed her in the stomach, tore up her house, and left, and she also died in 3 days. The rest of the story was written in the Bible under Isaiah and Kings. I found the story in 1970s. However, I can write it just from the Bible. I have done so much research. Also, there are people back again that can contribute to the words found in the Bible. In this lifetime, in 1977, my mother caught her foot in her satin bedspread. She twisted and fell, breaking her hip socket. I called the ambulance, and we were told she needed surgery. The doctor said perhaps we should not do that. I was shocked. He said, well, she's 92, and it'd be more than 5 hours, and she would be in the hospital for at least 3 months if she lived. What would happen if she had not have it? What would happen if she did not have this operation, I asked. Well, she would have pneumonia, probably just pass away, he said. I was shocked, again, but I asked for the surgery. The surgery was over in 2 hours, and they put her in a room, and I was working, thinking that it'd be 5 hours. I canceled appointments and dashed to the hospital. On her door, it was closed with a skull sign that said this was a dangerous room. Staph infection, do not enter. I was hysterical. She did not have staph. She might have it now in this room. I made them move her. She was so healthy that she sat up the second day and walked with a walker to the nurse's station on the third day. She took supplements and vitamins every day, jumped rope, and chinned herself before she fell. The good thing was that I knew many of the nurses, and they let me bring her a pep-up drink every day full of her supplements. She was doing great. They told me I needed to take her home at the end of the week. I thought I had months. So I visited nursing homes. I thought she would get extra exercise with supervision, and I mistakenly told them that I worked. It could only come after work. In 2 weeks, I surprised them, and she was tied to her bed, laying and pooped and drugged. I could see her tailbone sticking out of her skin. I called a cab and carried her out of that that place. I was so shocked. I took her to the doctor that did the surgery. He suggested hospitalization again, and he wanted her near his office so he could go to see her every day. I wanted her back close to me where I knew the nurses. He insisted this was the most expensive hospital in Vegas where we lived. I took her there, and I asked for light treatments on her backside. I could tell they were not going to care for her, so I hired 3 private nurses for 24-hour care. There was a blonde lady sharing the room, and I was glad that she seemed friendly, and this all happened at Christmas. Mother's birthday was January 10th, and I took her presents and a cake. Her elbows had scabs, and the blonde said the nurse dropped her. I asked, and they said that she'd be all right. They had put her on oxygen. She did not need that before, so I knew her ribs were out of place. And I called a healer friend, and he agreed to fly in from Denver on Wednesday. I found out the nurse that dropped her was on the hospital staff, and one of my hired private nurses had called in sick. I spoke with each nurse and told them if they had to call in sick, to call me. I thanked the blonde lady for telling me, and she agreed to keep an eye on my mother for me. She asked me if I could help her. She had a metal collar attached to the wall with a metal rod. She was paralyzed and could not move even a finger. As usual, I thought, I was supposed to really help her. I saw a metaphysical book on her table, and I just blurted out, "I have a healer coming on Wednesday. If you can figure a way to get a wheelchair and get out of here, I'll ask him to heal you at my beauty shop after he worked on my mother here in the hospital." While I was talking to her, I saw a small gold figure in the bed next to her, a boy about 3 feet long. So I asked her if there was someone else in her family that needed help, and she said, "Brenda." I said, "Oh no, someone else." She said, "Johnny." That was the name. I told her that if she saw the healer on Wednesday, the hospital would release her on Friday, and that she could return to Utah, her home, and get her 2 kids and bring them to see the healer on Saturday. I wondered who was the golden boy. Her doctor came in after we talked, and she asked him when she would be able to go home, and he told her, after Easter. Well, that was months away. But she agreed. Wednesday arrived, and the healer worked on my mother. She was fine and off of oxygen. Then we took the blonde lady to my shop. She was terrific, and no more paralyzation. He told her not to let anyone work on her body. She did not know how to do that, but the physical therapist called in sick, and so the blonde left on a bus for Utah on Friday, just as I told her she would. My healer friend planned to stay till Monday, and she did not come or call. We went out to eat, and she was paging all over Vegas looking for us. She went to a gas station on Saturday and backed into a post and was paralyzed again, so she had to come. She found us, and then she brought her 2 children. When I saw the boy, I remembered him from my life as Abijah. My son, he was back. The golden boy was Hezekiah. The healer was Harvey, and he was my father Zechariah, in Judea a famous seer, a close friend to Isaiah. So now Harvey recognized him as his grandson. So we were all together again. Almost 3,000 years had passed. His injuries occurred when he was 4 years old, when he got away from his mother and went down an adult ski slope, hit the building, and gave him last rites. Every bone in his body was broken. They sewed him up, expecting a funeral, but he did not die. He woke from a 3-month coma and told his mother that he saw Jesus standing on a pyramid with a sword in his hand. And Jesus said, "You must come back. You have work to do." So he spent the next 4 years in horrible pain until he found Harvey, the healer. His lip was sewed up inside his nose. He lived on aspirin and laxatives. So Harvey started on his toes, and the final work was on his nose and lip, all with just his hands. As he came toward me, over by a full-length mirror, he looked at himself, and I said, "Well, John, what do you think?" "My nose is too pointy, and I have to crap," he said. He was 8 years old. When he came back out toward me, he said, "You know that you were my mother." I said, "Yes, I remember." I did not know how much he remembered, so I did not offer any information. So now I knew the blonde lady was Shahim Rezana. Her husband in that life was Malachar, the captain of the guards in Phoenicia, that took Hezekiah to the Greek ship and accompanied him all the way back to Judea. The nurses dropped my mother one more time, and this time her head hit a table and she died. It was a long, horrible year. Melvin Belli was my attorney. The hospital tried to say her death was from natural causes. No coroners were available to do an autopsy. That hospital was owned by a group of powerful doctors, and they wanted $100,000 for killing my mother. So you know what we did? We just closed the nursing home completely. But the doctors had too much power. They did not take me to court. Once I found a coroner, I always felt that my mother gave her life so that I could meet my son and my family from 726 B.C. The boy bothered his mother until she brought him to visit us. He remembered so much, and he wanted to talk to me and my husband Vernon in person. We had a pool and a large house in Vegas, and they came for a couple of days. Johnny, the golden boy, brought three crayon drawings of where we lived in Sidon, Phoenicia, and there was our tent attached to the Sidon city wall. There was the Mediterranean Sea with the sunbathers and the rocks near where we buried the king's box. He wanted to prove to me that he really remembered. Then he went to my husband and said, "You were my father." And that was also true, for we had planned to be married, and Isaiah said that God wanted new blood on the throne, and I was pregnant, so they sold me to King Hazaz. He never knew. He always thought that Hezekiah was his son. This had been a long story, and there is much more to tell, so I will continue next week. The uprisings in Egypt remind me so vividly of this particular ancient lifetime. The first time I visited Egypt, I met President Sadat and his wife. He gave me a beautiful amber necklace. I arranged for his wife to receive some honors for her work with the poor. The reception was on a beautiful ship in the Mediterranean. I was also a guest of the Mubarak family, and I was seated next to Prince Philip of England up on the platform. Mubarak gifted him with a gorgeous white stallion. And later at the home dinner, the table seated 80 people, all men. Women stayed in the kitchen, and there I met the chief of the pyramids. We ate on gold plates with red satin velvet tablecloth trimmed in Akure lace. The dining area was on the third floor. There was an elevator, and also there were five living rooms, and I asked why. And they said that was where he handled different court activities. I really did not know who he was until Sadat was killed. In another recall, I will tell you why he called me sister and why my husband Vernon did not want him to visit us in Las Vegas. Remember, Lavendar suggested that each of us should clean out the plaque from our veins and arteries. It's urgent. You don't want to have Alzheimer's or dementia in a loved one's future. Okay, I'm signing off. Doc Belva. Okay, back to you, Ariel.
Well, let's get Belva on here. Hang on, I'm quick. Okay. Hi, Belva.
Hi.
That is quite the full circle type story.
Well, it's much bigger than that. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it gives us a small glimpse of how grand the design can stretch over centuries after centuries after centuries. And
and the fact that you can know about that and still live in the third dimension is really something.
And my grandmother was Cherokee, like you.
Wow. Wow. So you've got really, really strong Pleiadian blood, because I know Native American is a you know, Pleiadian clan as well. Lavender, are you still with us?
Yes, and Belva, why don't you tell about when the blonde girl was able to read Phoenicia, the notes on the refrigerator door, the language that they used in the family.
That's why I had to go to my mother's death to show how I met her, and that's my next story will be her me bringing Frank in and
okay.
having her tell that story in her words instead of mine.
Okay, well, we'll wait till next week to do that one then.
That'll be part
okay.
four. It's very complicated, and it almost gives me a headache because I have so many little things that are all connected with each other, and so many people in my life in this time that were there in that time. So there's a grand plan, evidently, for right now.
This stuff is not coincidence. This cannot be any stretch of the imagination, because you've had just so much proof over and over and over again.
And we talked about blood today, see? And who
uh-huh.
was my teacher, my mother? And how did I get to the hospital to meet Sheem, who was the blonde girl in that life and the blonde girl in this life? The only reason I went there was because my mother went there
mm-hmm.
for me to meet. That was the reason I was there. I was supposed to meet her. If I had put her in that other hospital where I wanted her to go, I never would have found her. Amazing.
Wow.
The whole thing is really, it's a very grand plan, and I don't exactly know what the end is going to be because it's still going on. She's
right.
still in my life. Johnny's still in my life. Hezekiah. My husband died in 86. He's over there now. He's Johnny's son. So it's still all going on. And it
but,
started
you know,
in 726 B.C.
Wow. Yeah, if it's just, again, it can be very comforting. Because a lot of people grieve for loved ones that are lost, but when you have the kind of consciousness that you do, and you see them come back, and now they're back in your lives again, there really is no death. There's just a transition from one form to another.
You just take a new car.
That's
it's
right.
Like trading in one car for another car. I mean,
yeah.
You can't have judgment. And what Lavender said earlier about judgment is true, because I don't have judgment. I know that everything that happens is part of my big long story, and I'll just let it happen. It's fine, whatever happens. I was upset when Vernon died, but then they called me and said he's back, and Johnny called me and said he's back, so, you know, it's okay.
That's great that he can that Johnny can remember too. That's amazing.
He remembers totally. He's the one that drew all the pictures and brought them to my house to prove to me. He said, I have to show you where we lived, and he drew all those pictures.
Wow.
And now he's my husband's father, and my husband is now 24 years old, and he just had a new baby. December the 11th, a little girl. So I don't know who she is, but it'll be interesting when she gets a little older when she starts telling me who she is.
Right, yeah, I mean, children are so open, and it's
up
not...
Up until they're five, they have really, really good recall.
Yeah,
sometimes
so it's
they
always...
speak foreign languages, all kinds
uh-huh.
of things.
Because yeah, it's...
He recognized me. My husband did. I saw him when he was 14 months old, and he grabbed me around my legs and said, "Belba, Belba, where have you been? I've looked everywhere for you." And he was only 14 months old.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, I'm glad that we are recording your stories for posterity, because I'm sure that, I mean, there are other people that also can have remembrances like that, but yours are just so vivid, so detailed.
Not the best judgment, that's the secret. You can't find fault with someone and things like that. That closes off your opening to memories and to recall, I think. At least that's how I feel. And it works for me because it just keeps happening. I just talked to Sheen day before yesterday, and she was telling me about other people that I knew that she's run into recently that were there. That's most amazing.
Wow. Well, we sure appreciate you sharing your story with us, and we will look forward to part four of Belva in Phoenicia, 727 BC, next week. And we love you, Belva. You know that. And I'm going to move on. We have just time for I'm going to check in with the chat room one more time. But thank you so much, Belva.
And I love the bloodlines. I loved all that information. It was very, very good.
Well, yeah, and your story just tied right into it this week. So thank
perfect.
You so much.
It was perfect.
And we'll talk to you next week, sweetie.
Okay, thank
bye-bye.
You.
Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. I'm going to check in with Sierra one more time before we say goodnight.
You know, synchronization
Hello.
Is confirmation.
That's right. I'm trying to click on this, and it's not letting me click, so let me just do a two-step here. There we go. Sierra, do we have any
yes.
other questions before before our show ends?
No, we don't have any other questions this time. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're quite welcome. And so we're just going to move on. I think we've done all the questions and answered everything. And Lavendar, anything you want to say in conclusion?
Well, just
we sign off?
Just that you know, after you hear the show tonight, and you know, to go to sleep and just ask for, you know, the guidance for your bloodline. And as we watch the developments that are happening over in Egypt, you know, just keep in mind that we have so many Pleiadian walk-ins on the planet that are activated now. And although there's turmoil that's happening, there will be an end to this, and there will be peace in the Middle East, one way or the other.
Well, that is a good thought to close on, but we have an 11th hour caller. Shall we give it a go?
Okay.
This person is calling from Skype, so I don't know who you are. You are on the air if you're calling from Skype.
Oh, hi, Lavendar and Ariel. This is Tricia.
Hello.
Wonderful show. When you were just talking about the coordination a few weeks ago, I had this phoenix come up in a meditation, and a few days later, the Egyptian thing broke out, and that was kind of a weird thing because a grid came up as well. But what I wanted to share was I had a galactic man appear in my meditation two nights ago, about 2 a.m, and he was just amazing. He came very quickly with this wonderful headband on, kind of like a headgear and like a uniform. I mean, he just had this uniform that just looked different. I mean, he just looked different. And I was so, I think they're really, really around contacting us, really big. I mean, I can, like, that's what I felt. So,
I think you're right, Trish. It's just a matter of days, really, in the scheme of things, galactic days before
they're officially introduced. But those are that good synchronization there. And we thank you for calling in.
Yeah, I'll let you go. And I've been loving the show. I can't not watch. He listened to one. It's like being addicted to a great series. You know, it's like I grew up with the radio, so I kind of like, you know, when I hear your story, Lavender, I just sort of feel like I'm listening to some play or something. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
And by the way, I think it was Catherine that sent me a video clip of a UFO spotted over the dome in Jerusalem. And I don't know how many people have seen it, but it's quite impressive. So there's many activations happening now from the ships.
Lavender.
You might check on YouTube. Just type in, you know, a UFO over the dome in Israel, and you'll see it.
I just wanted to say your reading was really accurate with my daughter, that you did a star seed reading. You said her education was going to be phenomenal this year. She's in New Zealand right now at a private school down there. She just started this week.
Good.
So, yeah. So thank you.
Yeah, good.
Confirmation.
Well, nice to hear from you.
All right. Thank you. Love and light, everybody. Good night.
Thank you, Tricia. Good night. So I would like to, before we close, say thank you to Purple Sage for handling our switchboard. I told her earlier, it's like the magical unseen hand there, but we sure do appreciate your help, Purple Sage, and Sierra in the chat room. Thank you so much. I know you do a great job. Lavendar, thank you for sharing more from your journals, and I know we have some equally important things coming out in the very near future, so please share the show with your friends. And I remind you one more time, please register for free at blogtalkradio.com and then click follow on our Starseed Radio Academy show page. So we'd like to get our number of official followers up to match the numbers of actual. We have over 1,000 people every week that listen to the show. I can track the numbers, but it's not reflected in that official followers thing. So please do that. And you'll be helping us and doing a little bit to elevate us into more visibility. So with that, Lavendar, thank you so much, as always. And we will be looking for more comments and questions from our listeners next week. Okay?
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night, Sierra. Good night, Purple Sage. Bye-bye.
Good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.